millions of desperately needed Corona crisis relief funds, taxpayer dollars earmarked for struggling small businesses, were funneled to wealthy mega churches favored by the Trump administration. Think of it as a political swamp, but with holy water. It won't surprise you that among the vocal critics of this corruption is the Freedom From Religion Foundation, an important voice in defending the constitutional separation of church and state for the benefit of both. With me now is Andrew Seidel, a constitutional attorney and the organization's director of strategic response. Andrew, welcome to State of Belief Radio.
Thank you so much for having me on. It is a genuine pleasure.
So, what are the total dollar numbers that we're talking about here?
Billions. So we don't know exact amounts because the Small Business Administration, which is administering the PPP program, released ranges of numbers. We hope to continue investigating and eventually arrive at a concrete total, but we're talking somewhere between $4 and probably $10 billion of taxpayer funds going to churches, houses of worship, and religious schools. And as you mentioned, a lot of those are megachurches and some of Trump's closest religious allies, the Christian nationalist preachers like Robert Jeffress, whose church took in between $2 and $5 million.
Goodness gracious. Well, what have you been able to discover so far about this fiscal favoritism? Do you have some good perspective on how being in Trump's pleasure was the reason they got the money?
Well, I can tell you that we were able to join in a White House call where members of the White House and White House staff joined with some of these top level Trump supporters and told them how to apply. They explained that it was very easy. There were a couple of people already on the call, preachers who had gotten the PPP funds and explained how to go about doing it. So they certainly received favorable treatment there. They were walked through this process by the White House itself. So, I mean, this really should shock the conscience. And we are talking about, you know, some of his closest allies taking in between $2 and $5 million. Jack Graham, Robert Jeffress, David Jeremiah, Greg Laurie, Tom Mullins. That's five members of Trump's evangelical advisory board that we were able to identify, you know, right off the bat when we started scouring through this data. And we think there are more, and there are probably some that are hiding behind other entities. A lot of these mega preachers are sophisticated when it comes to business and avoiding taxes and things like that. They may be organizing the entity that received the PPP funds in a way that is not clearly identifiable. You're talking about Trump's closest allies. We think about $50 million went to them. Again, it's hard to know exactly so far. Probably in the neighborhood of over 12,000, about 12,400 is our best guess right now, American churches took in that money. So, I mean, just massive, massive amounts of money. And, you know, you're talking about a lot of the Catholic diocese also took money. You know, one that really jumped out at me was the Diocese of Pittsburgh, took in between $2 and $5 million. And the reason that that jumped out at me was because people may remember that a few years back, the Diocese of Pittsburgh was featured pretty prominently in that Pennsylvania grand jury report on the abuse and rape and cover-up scandals in Pennsylvania Catholic Church. And they took in that $2 to $5 million 20 months to the day after that report was finalized. And I mean, it's hard for people to hear, but the reason that the Diocese of Pittsburgh stuck in my head is because priests in that diocese were identifying easy victims for other priests by giving them gold necklaces with big crosses on them. And that fact just stuck in my It was so horrific. I had to read the whole report, and it was so horrific that that one stood out at me. And when I was scanning through that list, I saw it, and I couldn't believe it. My jaw dropped. You know, $2 to $5 million of taxpayer money going to this organization that, you know, and let's the Catholic Church has its own bank, it has its own country, a priceless collection of art, and it's taking taxpayer money. It's reaching into your pocket during this pandemic when everybody is struggling and taking your money. And that to me is just fundamentally un-American and absolutely unconstitutional.
Well, you've prepared helpfully a spreadsheet. Are there patterns that emerge regarding religious groups that have been the loudest enablers of the administration?
So yeah, Ryan Burge was one of the researchers who does some phenomenal data at the intersection of religion and politics in modern America. And he was the one who actually put together that spreadsheet. So it did some phenomenal work. I don't want to take credit for that. We certainly used it. And then we've been scraping it for our own data. He's also done some other work really convincingly showing that some of the more Trump-heavy areas of the country, more churches per capita were rewarded in those areas. Now, but it's hard to know whether or not that, you know, the causation versus the correlation problem crops up there. So it's hard to know. And again, you know, I mean, we're talking about 12,000 plus grants to these churches, billions and billions of dollars. The SBA gave us the data in terms of a range. So we know that Robert Jeffress's church took in between $2 and $5 million, but don't know where in that range it landed. So it's difficult to get a really refined analysis yet. And this just came out on Monday. So we're still doing a lot. We do hope to issue a report on this at some point. The Freedom From Religion Foundation, that is.
Andrew, I would appreciate you explaining briefly why this is such an important issue to draw a line in the sand about.
I'd be happy to do that. I mean, there are a lot of reasons why this is problematic. The government's taxing power should not be wielded to oblige Muslims to bankroll temples, or to coerce Jews to subsidize Christian and Catholic churches, or to force Christians to fund mosques, or to compel the non-religious to support any of the above. And that is a founding American value. The idea that the coercive taxing power of the government can't be wielded to force you to donate to a church. And right now what you're seeing, we have entered the era of government-enforced tithing. And one of the country's first religious freedom laws, the Virginia Statute for Religious Liberty, said that it is, quote, sinful and tyrannical to tax citizens and then give that money to houses of worship. So the right to be free from that compulsion is the bedrock of religious liberty. So that's the first thing. This is a gross violation of every single American's religious liberty. The second is that we are giving, for the first time in American history, our government the power to fund religion directly. And we're giving that power to Donald Trump, who was carried into office on a wave of Christian nationalism and whose penchant for grift and corruption is unbounded. So we are handing him this political weapon and overturning constitutional clauses that date back to 1776 doing so. Okay, those are two big things. So Trump, and we, as we've already discussed, Trump's wielding this weapon to reap this political benefit, doling out that money to his megachurch buddies. The third problem is that these same churches have no financial transparency or accountability. So unlike other 501c3s or nonprofits, unlike the Freedom From Religion Foundation, which files extensive financial paperwork with the IRS every year, churches don't do that. We have no idea what they are going to do with this money, whether or not they're going to follow the rules, and there's no real way for that to be enforced. And the Small Business Administration has all but said, we're not going to try and enforce any of the transparency rules that are in the PPP because churches have religious liberty. So we will likely never know what churches did with this money unless Congress steps in to do something about that. So huge, huge problems from terms of transparency and accountability, right? I mean, tax exemption is a public trust, and that public trust requires transparency, and there's no reason to expect that it will be, that public trust will be honored here.
I know there are profound issues with recent Supreme Court decisions at the intersection of religion, government, and politics. This is certainly one of them. What do you see as the biggest concern that you have right now?
I mean, I think overall, Christian nationalism is the biggest concern that I have. It is an existential threat to the American Republic. It is it carried Donald Trump into office. It is the motivating factor behind the judges that have been appointed under this administration. And the true goal is, you know, Christian nationalism is the idea that we were founded as a Christian nation, that we're based on Judeo-Christian principles. And importantly, that we've strayed from those foundations, right? That we need to return to those Christian nationalist roots, to our godly roots. And they use that language of return to justify all manner of public policy. It seems like a long time ago these days, but you know, when you're talking about the Muslim ban, that was almost explicitly Christian nationalist. The child separation policy at the border, throwing kids in cages. Jeff Sessions justified that by citing the Bible, Romans 13. Christian nationalism has permeated virtually every aspect of this administration and many of those Supreme Court decisions that you just mentioned, including the Espinoza case that came down last week and the Guadalupe case that came down just yesterday as we're talking about this, which allows churches to discriminate on the basis of disability or sex or for any reason against any of their employees, so long as they can say that their employees have some minimal religious duties. So we are seeing Christian nationalists, including at least five justices on the Supreme Court, redefining the relationship between state and church in this country right now. And it is really very alarming. And it's one of the reasons that I wrote the book, The Founding Myth, Why Christian Nationalism is Un-American, which I was published about a year ago now, to try to give people tools and arguments and weapons to fight back against this un-American political ideology.
Listen, I want you to expand on that title, The Founding Myth. Why is it a myth and why is it un-American?
I mean, the very identity of the Christian nationalist depends on certain lies and myths, that we are one nation under God, in God we trust, that the Declaration of Independence references the Christian God four times, something we heard a lot just last week, that the Founding Fathers were all evangelical Christians, that they prayed at the Constitutional Convention, that George Washington knelt in the snow in prayer at Valley Forge that cold winter, and that all of our laws are based on the Ten Commandments. Now, without the historical cover that those lies and myths give, the policy justifications begin to crumble. Without their commonwealth of lies and myths, their identity begins to wither and fade. So basically, the Christian nationalists' political and ideological reality is actually incredibly weak and vulnerable because it is based on historical distortions and lies. But in the age of Trump, we need more than facts to fight back. We need better arguments. And that is the purpose of the founding myth, to really bury Christian nationalism and to utterly destroy that un-American political ideology.
I know that you don't usually have an opportunity to hear a Baptist minister talk about how important freedom from religion foundation really is. I do recognize that. And I want you, before you get off today, to tell our listeners a little bit more about Freedom from Religion Foundation and how people can get involved in it.
I'm thrilled to hear you say that because, you know, one of the things that I constantly say that I wrote in the book is there is no such thing as the freedom of religion without a government that is free from religion. To have genuine religious liberty, true religious freedom, that requires a secular government. And that is one of the things that we fight for at the Freedom From Religion Foundation every single day. We have two basic goals. We work to educate and to separate. So we work to educate the public about what it is to be a non-believer in the United States. And then we work to keep state and church separate as our founding fathers and the Constitution intended. The work that we do, we have 10 attorneys on staff. We handle between 4,000 and 5,000 state church complaints. So these are just individuals who contact us and say, hey, we need help. We step in and help them. We rely entirely on our 30,000 members for support. So please if you value religious freedom, if you value the separation of state and church, please do join us. We need all the help we can get, especially now. You know, and one of the things that I was doing a book talk virtually last night, and I said that America will never be a Christian nation, because the moment it becomes a Christian nation, it will cease to be America. Right. And that, I hadn't said that before, and that was, I thought, a reasonable summation of both FFRF's mission and the book. But the thing that I always come back to is there is no such thing as the freedom of religion without a government that is free from religion. If people listening only take that away from this conversation, I would be more than happy.
Andrew Seidel is a constitutional attorney and author who serves as Director of Strategic Response at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Andrew, it's great to be with you, to know what you're doing. I appreciate what you're doing. Maybe we can get together again and talk some more about this. But today, thank you so much for being with us on State of Belief Radio.
It was such a pleasure. Thank you for having me. And I'd love to come back and talk when we've had more time to dig through all that data on the PPP loans.